Majin Waha Winch na Galvia, agus Falchigadri Galway Talks, Lumhain, John Morley. Ag Chocht News Nyov. No, we'll be looking at the Seven Springs situation. There's some positive news there for the nursing home in the area. A book of condolences opened for the late Saoirse Ruan, RIP. Campaign organised against aquaculture farm off Kinvara Coast. Call for long-term funding by Gort Family Resource Centre. We dissect the referendum result. Two no votes were the decision. Galway Home features in Home of the Year. We have the Kilfenora Cayley Band in to play a bit of music. And we also have Galway Greats with our very own Valerie Hughes. All this plus lots more coming up between now and 12 midday. It's Monday. A very good morning to you. And a very good morning to you. Welcome to Galway Talks with me, John Morley. I'm filling in the hot seat for Keith all week. And just a reminder as well, if you want to be taking part in our Salt Hill OB from O'Connor's Bar this Friday, do send us an email to our comments line. That's comments@galwaybayfm.ie. You can also text and WhatsApp us to 086-38-33553. And you can phone reception. Fiona's on there this morning, 09177-0077. We'd like to get your interaction on the programme this morning. First, I want to go to an ongoing situation that's been going on for the past number of months and years, indeed in the Loch Ray area, with the whole Seven Springs situation. I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Matty Quinn of the Loch Ray Concerned Citizens Group. Matty, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Matty, you're very welcome onto the programme today. I believe there's some positive news coming there over the past few days in relation to the Seven Springs Centre.
Yeah, John. Well, as you know, this campaign is going on for, I suppose, over 2 years now at this stage, you know, since 22. And it's centred really about, you know, the name of the group is the Loch Ray Concerned Citizens Group, and we were extremely concerned that a purpose-built, state-of-the-art, beautiful facility was being not opened after COVID. And, you know, for so many people, this was a huge disappointment. And our central focus, and only our central focus, was that the older people would be cared for and their families, which is equally important as well. So at our most recent meeting, there was a commitment to reopen Seven Springs, which obviously is a source of great comfort and delight to us that this is happening. And it's nice to be able to bring good news, one of these programs for a change, because up to now, any interviews and so on we had, well, we were hoping, fingers crossed, this was happening, this might happen as one. But at least now there is some light on the end of that tunnel.
Yeah, and just remind people of the history of it as well, Matty, because I know there was a lot of confusion in terms of where the site would be developed and whether it was up to health and safety standards. But that's kind of all been put to bed at this stage.
It has really. Well, you see, the thing is that things happened in the past, and I'm not fully sure how they came about, but when COVID was over, people were expecting, you know, the place were opening up and, you know, let's get this thing up and running. But there was nothing happening, and there was very confusing, conflicting messages coming. It was going to open, it wasn't going to open, it was whatever. But eventually it was informed that it was closing down. That was it. Now, people were absolutely, you know, shocked with this, that this would happen, because it's a new facility. It was built in 2010, I think. A state-of-the-art, everything perfect in it, you know, as to why this would be happening. But it appeared that it was something to do with some new ruling that HICWA had about the amount of circulation space for patients in the nursing unit. And to solve this problem, a number of options were presented, but they weren't accepted. And eventually the solution was to take over and occupy the day centre, obviously to the detriment of the people using the facility. Then after that, there was a temporary arrangement whereby, and they still are doing it, they go to the local hotel for 3 days a week. It's not ideal. It's not the hotel's fault. I mean, a hotel is a hotel, a day centre is a day centre. But the extraordinary thing that happened was it opened for 1 day a week. Now, nobody could figure out how there was a problem on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday. But there was no problem on Wednesdays. You know, that's another issue. But at the present thing, anyway, we have this commitment to open. But it will be a couple of weeks on, because there's some reconfiguration work to do in the building. And obviously tenders and all that kind of stuff have to go through. Now, it's not a major job, but still all the procedures have to go through. And the other thing as well in terms of reopening is that HICWA wanted on a phased basis. They don't want the whole lot just open in one go. They wanted maybe to go to 2 days a week for the beginning and then maybe scale up to three and so on. And the reason for this is that the CNU unit and the daycare unit will be kind of integrated. So the systems of each have to kind of match each other. And rather than just go in as one massive, you know, occupation, it'll be done on a phased basis to get everything to run smoothly.
Do we know what the timescale of that is?
We don't have it yet. We will have it probably, we were promised it in both a week to 2 weeks, okay, when there'll be a better position when this maybe bit of construction stuff and so on is to be done, you know. But it's been a long haul, John, you know. It began in 22, there was nothing happening and it wasn't reopening and there were conflicting statements. Then in June 22, Councillor Geraldine Dunne, who organised a protest outside the CNU unit, you know, why he wasn't opening. And there still was nothing happening. And our group now, the Concerned Citizens Group, it was kind of an ad hoc group that came together by word of mouth. And it was amazing, the first meeting, just by word of mouth, there was, I think, about 50 people who showed up. And we kind of decided, look, we can't let this thing go. We've got to take this on board. And we kind of took on the campaign that Geraldine had started. And as well as that, Deputy Sean Kenny got on board and helped us out and advice. You see, we're all amateurs in this thing. We don't know how all this thing works and certainly how to get into organisations like PHSE and so on or the different bodies. You know, we have no experience of dealing with this stuff or how do you get into it. And you needed some people with knowledge or background to help you along the way, you know, with this thing, which they did. And indeed, you can mention as well three other councillors there, Declan Kelly, Sean Curley and Jimmy McLaren, who also helped us out, you know, along the way. So there was an extra protest march in October. And from that, we've been meeting and consulting and listening and talking to people and doing all we can, you know, to try and push this thing along the way.
Does it go back to that petitions committee there on the 5th of October where you had that breakthrough, or where do you put it down to, Matty?
I think it was, yeah, that was. Well, in the meantime, there were 3,000 signatures collected in no time from people in the town and the area. And if you think of that figure, if you leave out the surrounding area, but just the town's population is about 6,000. So your equivalent of half population signed up this petition, you know, and were only dying to, and it was a written position, it wasn't an online one, you know. But we succeeded in escalating this thing up to the Joint Oireachtas Committee. For that, for people who mightn't be familiar, well, they are familiar with it now from all the stuff you see in RT, you know, I think people are very familiar with how that thing works. Yeah. But you have to present a case, they consider it, and if they feel it's worth investigating, they take it on board. So we were invited to make a presentation to the Joint Oireachtas Committee for Petitions and Ombudsman. Anna Cronin and Patrick Looney, who were involved from the committee, we have a great committee altogether, you know, this thing, but they were involved with me on that. And it was a daunting experience, and you know, because you make your presentation, as you probably have seen, and then you're questioned by the TDs on that committee. So, you know, if you don't have your ducks in a row, I can tell you, you'll be taken apart very easily. Yeah. But they, I was actually, Anne and myself were sitting in the seats occupied by, what do you call them, Ryan Tuberty and Noel Kelly, so they were still hot. After that, they were amazed at really at our case, and they were astonished because they were saying, listen, there's something mad here, because there were two other groups there from Clonmel and from Cork who were trying to get out of old buildings into a new building. And the chairman of the committee said, in your case, he said, you're in a new building and they want to get you out of it into an old kitchen built in 1841 of the workhouse. He said, it just doesn't add up. So they invited in HSE to make a presentation to them on this. And the other thing that happened around that time as well was with the Western Health Forum. So again, Don, for people who might be familiar with that, it's a forum composed of councillors from Donegal, I think, to Clare, and they meet, on a, I think, monthly or whatever, to discuss various health issues relevant to them. And due to the good offices of three of the people on that, by the way, are councillors from the county, but Johnny Kilday from Tuam, Liam Carroll from Ordinmore, and Evelyn Parsons from Mellisloe. Through their good offices, we set up a meeting with the chief health officer, who was newly appointed, a man called John Fitzmaurice, and with Des Mulligan, who's the person in charge of older people's affairs. They were newly appointed then. And I would just have to say, like, that once they came aboard, it was like a breath of fresh air. I mean, they were most helpful. They would listen to what our points of view was, and we had communication, which we really, you know, didn't feel we had, you know, enough of before that.
Yeah.
And since then, we've been working with them, and they've been working on this case. And, you know, that's kind of where we're at the moment.
Yeah.
So,
finally, Matty, are you satisfied with this outcome, you and your members?
Well, obviously, Dan, if we had the whole centre back as it was, you know, that would have been our objective. But, you know, you can only achieve what you can achieve, you know. And a lot of this thing is caught up in rules and regulations. And the fact, you see, one of the things that caused havoc with this was that normally HICWA have nothing to do with day centres, as far as I know. They're merely nursing units or their thing. But back in 2017... the map, which is used to register a nursing unit, has to show the outline of it, you see, for HICWA. But this map was changed to include the day centre.
Yeah.
No, nobody knew about this. It just happened. And of course, then you see HICWA had an involvement in it because of no part of the nursing unit. But there's a tremendous demand for this thing. It was a fantastic centre, like, and the people in it, they loved it. You know, I meet people. It's one man I meet after Mass every Sunday, and his first question, any sign of anything happening? When can I get up there? You know, I want to go in. And the tragedy is that 2 years have gone by now since things opened for COVID, and so many people have lost out, you know, in that time. People, they're no longer maybe with us, or they're no longer able to use the facility. And even as it is, I understand there's a huge amount of people who want to use it. You know, and even to accommodate the pressure that's on, you know. But this thing, I think, what really kept us going, you know, there were times, John, and you feel, oh God, look, are we getting anywhere? And, you know, you felt you were up against it. But the thing I think that kept us going was the fact that you had great support from a wonderful committee we had, and also that 3,000 signatures, you know, that kind of empowered and energized you and maybe showed you something like the power of people, really, you know, to take on what are perceived to be obviously injustices. And we had an example of this on the weekend, you know, with the referendum, the power of the people could say what they wanted. And I suppose, listening to some of the comments there during the last while on the referendum, there's so much about care of people and family and so on, you know, all the different interpretations of the purpose. Here was a purpose-built, state-of-the-art unit, fulfilling that to the nth degree. I mean, it's so sad to think that, you know, this is what happened. Now, look, we have it back, we have a commitment to have it back. It won't be as it was, but at least it's part of the way there. And hopefully, you know, there can be more progress.
All right.
Matty
Quinn of the Loughrea Concerned Citizens Group, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks a million, John. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Matty. I'm going to move from that subject on to another one now, because I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by the Cathaoirleach of Galway County Council, Councillor Liam Carroll. Liam, good morning.
Good morning.
Sad news over the weekend, indeed, and even into late last week, Liam, with the passing of Saoirse Ruan in Kiltullagh, and we covered extensively on the programme here as well, and our thoughts and sympathies go to all those in Kiltullagh and to the Ruan family as well. I had the pleasure of chatting to Saoirse and Mum here in studio last November, but it was sad scenes over in Kiltullagh, and I know you wanted to pay your respects, and you've actually opened a book of condolence as well this morning.
Yes, I was at the funeral yesterday, and it was a very poignant funeral. And I send out my condolences to Saoirse and to Ollie and to Farah Rose on the sad passing of Saoirse. Saoirse was an absolute inspiration to not only County Galway, but to the whole country in what she did. She suffered quite a lot, but she had the resilience and she had the positivity to get up in the morning, to get out and to get going. And she demonstrated that in her 12 years on this earth. And I, as a mark of respect to Saoirse, I've decided as Cathaoirleach of Galway County Council to open a book of condolences, which will be in the atrium in county buildings from 10 o'clock this morning. And I would ask, and this is for the people of the whole county and the people of the city, to come in and sign the book of condolences as a mark of respect to Saoirse.
Mm. And how long will it be open for, Liam? What's the time period?
Well, that will depend on the number of people coming in, but we'll keep it open for a week or a week and a half at least anyway.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important and it's very appropriate as well, because there was that huge outpouring of emotion. We saw the likes of Ryan Tubridy even coming back from London to attend the funeral as well. So there is an appetite out there for people to pay their respects and pass on their sympathies to the family.
Yes, indeed. Ryan Tubridy came. I was there present yesterday with the aide-de-camp of President Michael D. Higgins, and it was a hugely, it was the most moving funeral, I would say, that I've been at. Now, unfortunately, I've been at too many funerals of young people in the past year, but this one certainly was the most poignant one, in that Saoirse captured the hearts and minds of the whole country, the whole county. And the outpouring of simply, I'd say yesterday when the priest was speaking at the Mass, and how Saoirse and Ollie kept it together, I don't know. I wouldn't, certainly I wouldn't be able to do it in their position. They were so dignified and so gracious when both of them spoke. And Father McInerney, in his eulogy, was so kind to the whole family.
Yeah. Rosanna, I think you mean, Councillor Carroll.
Pardon?
Rosanna, the mum you're speaking about, Councillor Carroll, is it?
Yes, well, yeah. Rosanna spoke and Ollie spoke, and Ollie recited a prayer that he used to recite to Saoirse every evening before she went to sleep, before they tucked her in. Oh, it was so moving and so sad.
Mm. Well, from all of us here in Galway Bay FM, I'd like to extend our deepest sympathies to the Ruan family, and may Saoirse rest in peace. Councillor Liam Carroll, the Cathaoirleach of Galway County Council, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
My pleasure.
Still to come on the programme, we look at an aquaculture farm that has caused a bit of a stir in South Galway. That's coming up next. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. If you want to get a text and WhatsApp into us, you can do on our number 086-3833-553. Now, though, I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio by two gentlemen from South Galway, of Eamon Coy and also Martin Galvin, because local community down there in Kinvara is looking to stop the development of a 26-acre aquaculture farm in Ochnish Bay. And Eamon and Martin join me in studio. And Martin, I might start with you first. Tell us about how this all came to light for the local community down there.
Yeah, John, we just want to say thanks very much for inviting us in the first place. And we're really proud of our local radio station, Galway Bay FM, for giving us a voice on this issue this morning. So this aquaculture licenses was applied for in 2019 in an ad that went into the back pages of the Clare Champion in the middle of August, when everyone was on holidays. And quite frankly, the community didn't have an opportunity to object, because the majority of the people affected by this issue live in Galway. And most of the people read the Connacht Tribune, and one wouldn't be reading the Clare Champion in the middle of August and looking for this kind of thing. So an aquaculture license was kind of slipped through. Well, it was actually rejected by the minister and by the department. Mm-hmm. And it went on appeal then to the Aquaculture Licence Appeals Board. And they overturned the minister's decision and granted the licence. And because the community hadn't objected, because we didn't know about it, we weren't part of the appeals process.
Okay.
Now, to carry out aquaculture, you need an aquaculture licence and you also need a foreshore licence. So the foreshore license is out for public consultation at the moment. It just ended last Saturday. So the community, we know about the issue now, and we're taking the opportunity around the foreshore license to object at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the project, and we never wanted the project, and we were never consulted, and we were never given a voice, and we have not been part of the decision-making process. So we're making our voice heard now at this stage.
Do we know why that decision was reversed?
Well, it's very interesting and a very good question, John, because the minister rejected it, and the minister's, you know, the Marine Institute did a report, actually, and they recommended that the project not go ahead. And the minister then put an ad in the paper saying the project was rejected, but it went on to appeal. Now, the Aquaculture Licence Board stepped in and they appointed a consultant who went out and looked at it, and their own consultant said not to go ahead with it. And somehow it got overturned and eventually approved. So we're not sure why and what's gone on, but we're trying to get to the bottom of it.
Okay, we're also joined in studio by Eamon Coy of the Kinvara Community Council. What's the reaction been like there with the local community, Eamon?
Well, I live in a beautiful area where we really have a very close-knit community and people who are very reasoned. By the way, first I'll say they're very much in favour of, you know, the many great run oyster farms that we have across the country. And many of us happen to like oysters, you know. Mm-hmm. We're not divided at what provides for a good taste. I think it's fair to say that the people of Auchinish and Kinvara, I think, are shocked and dismayed that somehow a project such as this, the work could have started and be well underway in circumstances where the people in question didn't have a foreshore licence. And we are about, you know, making sure that the law is upheld. And this is an area of special conservation. Really idyllic, beautiful area where tourists and local people alike benefit so much from the ecology in that area, the beautiful surroundings. And I think people are fearful that if this decision isn't overturned, you know, to provide a foreshore license and indeed to rebuke the previous license, that what do we have any real rules in place going forward? Is it that anything goes? Now, we're hopeful that that doesn't happen. And I think we have a fear not just that the immediate problems are dealt with, but there will be a point when all this gets resolved. And I think we're fairly confident that the license will not be provided, and indeed that the agriculture license will be withdrawn as well. There'll be a major clear-up operation here, because we now have a lot of rusting steel out in the bay that is causing a huge amount of pollution, and we want to ensure that this is dealt with. This is an area where people who have rights onto this foreshore that go back to medieval times, you know, generations of people have harvested seaweed and oysters. They feel that their whole way of life is under threat, and that really it's almost as if their rights are being pushed one side. You know, a lot of rock breaking, a lot of structural damage has already been done in this area that has in many ways affected those lands, those areas that, you know, where there was, I suppose, markings there, the stone really framed a lot of those fields.
That's a really
a lot of that's been broken
really
up.
Really important point, Eamon, and John, for your listeners to know, many will know actually that this is the site of a very, very special area called the Acres. And what the Acres are is a medieval seaweed fields. And Dr. Michael Gibbons, who's a well-known archaeologist in Galway, he called it the single best example of a midden seaweed farm on the entire island of Ireland. Mm. So if this aquaculture farm goes ahead, it's going to put that into jeopardy and possibly destroy it, and we'll have lost something that's vital to our national heritage and of vital national historical importance.
And just explain to me your concerns and how that'll happen.
Well, you know, if it goes ahead, it's going to construct a 26-acre industrial-scale aquaculture farm over these medieval seaweed fields, and to be lost and gone forever.
And what does that consist
of?
Tractors
coming in at the heavy machinery, lorries coming down a private laneway across foreshore commonage that's owned by local people who were never asked, who never gave the permission and did not authorise any of this. And so their rights have been completely contravened here.
Yeah. At this point, I just want to say we have not named the company involved. We're not going to, but we will leave it open to them if they do want to give us a statement and give their side of the story, and the same too to the Aquaculture Board as well. But I suppose, just to come back to you, Eamon, is there also other serious environmental concerns? We mentioned the seaweed beds and that, but the fact that you're in the Burren Lowlands area, beautiful part of Galway and the west of Ireland as well, and the SACs in the area.
Absolutely. You know, we have very rare species of birds that actually feed in that area. You know, we have brint geese, we have flapping, we have the curlew. We have a lot of, I suppose, almost rare species these days that really are under threat. And if this development was to go ahead, they would be so severely impacted. And we might begin to see the demise, really, of something so important in our area. So the ecology of that area and the biodiversity of it is something that really almost needs to be seen to be appreciated. It's so rare and so special. So we're very determined to protect that. And I might make a point that I think is very critical in all of this, just to put it maybe in some sort of context. 50% of this bay is already earmarked for oyster farming. So it's not as though that we're completely against the whole business. That's a statement of fact. So I think there's, you know, there's a reasonable share there that's already being taken advantage of. And what we want to do is to protect what's left. And if we fail to protect what's left, it will really be the beginning of the end of something that's not just special in Ireland, but is respected throughout the world, and particularly in Europe. And we have people in Europe now becoming extremely worried and interested in our campaign. And, you know, here's what we have locally. We have Anne Rabbitt as Fianna Fáil Minister, who's come and said she's backing us, you know, fully in terms of our campaign. Cathal Crowe, TD from Clare, Joe Byrne, our local councillor, who's worked tirelessly in this area for the whole of Kinvara over many years. Really a real stalwart for all of us. Bill Slattery, a retired councillor. Senator Sean Kine. And we have on Athaskan Coast Watch. So they respect that we've come at this in a very well-informed, very, very responsible way. Mm. And we're there to protect something that's of interest for everybody, and not just for the present generation, but for generations to come. So, you know, it would be neglectful of all of us if we didn't do everything that we should and must. Now, I think, you know, we had a meeting just recently where 150 people turned out, and the population of the area itself is low. So it was so heartening to see that people have actually, you know, they've really come out and said, enough is enough. We want to see this stop. Now, we are looking to the department to wake up and really do the responsible thing. We have huge misgivings, and, you know, I won't go into on air, but we've communicated this formally. We've not just come at this in some sort of, you know, shoddy way. We're very measured. We're very determined. We've sought legal advice. And we really just want to get a resolution. And, you know, we don't want, it's not about a fight for fight's sake. I think if the department do the responsible thing, don't issue the foreshore license, and really remove the aquaculture license and ensure that area is cleaned up, we can move back to what we all appreciate, you know, sharing in that beauty, that scenery, that wonderful ecology that is of benefit to just about everybody.
But is it the department's fault? Because this decision was reversed by the Aquaculture License Appeals Board. Are they not independent of the department?
They are, but I don't think we would give way to, you know, one works in complete isolation to that of another. Okay. I suppose what I want to say on air is we won't go into all of the nuances of who, where, what, but be assured we have formally communicated with the various departments, and we've put them on notice that they must do the right thing. And we're not going away. This is not a light-hearted campaign. There's real passion here. And the local farmers who have rights onto this area are feeling, you know, their whole way of life is under threat. And they're beginning to question whether or not their rights mean anything. It's as though they're pushed one side. It's unimaginable that the development could have gone on as far as it has already.
But you're right. You're right, John, you know, as well. Like, you know, the department did make the right decision. That needs to be pointed out. They absolutely did. They did reject it. What happened after that, we don't know why or how or what happened, but the minister did make the right decision. So what we want them to go back is go back to that default position, that default setting, and, you know, just ensure that the right thing is done here, you know, because the minister was on the right side of this.
It's funny in a sort of way that this sort of thing always seems to happen in the south of Galway. I can see a lot of parallels between the Gort Biogas campaign as well. Are you noticing that? Are you digging your heels in for a similar type of campaign and fight?
Well, we're going to stay at this for the long road. You know, this is not something we're just going to walk away from now. But as Eamon said, we're not, absolutely not in this for a fight. We just want to see something sensible done, resolved sensibly, and we'll be very, very happy with this. But if we have to stay in this for the long haul, we're quite prepared to do that.
Yeah. And what are your next steps?
Well, our next step is to draw attention to the heritage importance here as well. And Senator Sean Kine is working with us to bring down the various folks from the different departments, from the Monuments Section, Department of Environment, and from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And we're going to really examine the historical importance of this, draw attention to it, because this is absolute national treasure that we do not want to lose. And it'd be remiss of us to do that. You know, there's a great phrase we're using locally at the moment is, become the ancestors that your descendants will be proud of.
Okay.
And that's what we want to do.
And Eamon, I might finish with you. You're from the Kinvara Community Council. and we were talking to you as well on our Community Matters show out in Kinvara there recently as well. But the population there and the locals there, they really do, when they get behind something, they really get behind it. We saw it with the different groups there that day, so this will be a similar sort of effort, one would imagine.
Absolutely. You know, it's rare. It's such a close-knit community, and everybody looks out for everyone else. And I have to say that, you know, the heartfelt, the strength of feeling, people feel hurt, they feel angry, they're really at a loss to understand how this could be happening right on their doorstep. So I can tell you, we have a community united, and as a community united, we're not for turning. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the department and just about all of the statutory bodies need to be on notice that they will be held to account. And it would be decent, really, if rather than have a wrangle about the what-ifs, if they were to just, as Martin has said, do a reset and step back to where this went wrong and really let's remedy the situation in a straightforward way, because people of Kinvara are very forgiving, but they'll be very unforgiving if the right thing isn't done, and isn't done now, because the determination is there. We're certainly not going away.
And you'll go all the way?
We'll go all the way, and we'll stay at this for as long as is necessary. But do you know why? Because it really is worth fighting for. This is a national treasure. Mm-hmm. And it's valued not just in Kinvara or in Ireland, but throughout the world. And, you know, it's a wonderful magnet for tourism. It has so, and it's a great learning place for young children. Lots of school children go there and learn about stuff that goes right back, as we stated earlier, to the medieval times.
Just to recognise our diaspora, John, they've been absolutely wonderful. We've had letters come in from Japan. We've had a letter come in from Cuba, believe it or not.
Wow.
We've had letters from Australia, from all over Europe, and from Canada, North America. So, look, the diaspora and have strong links to Durs, to Newquay, to Achnish. They're highly upset over this. So, look, we're hoping our kind of international reputation is not sullied in any way here. But, look, we can't be sure of that either. But I think if this is caught now and something done to remedy the situation, mm-hmm. We can avoid that kind of hit on our international reputation.
Yeah, well, I think you're going about it the right way. You're opening dialogue, you're using diplomacy, you're using all the channels. So, look, that's all you can do, and you have to keep the fight going as well. Eamon Coy and Martin Gallivan, thank you for coming to studio and joining us on Galway Talks. And still to come on the programme, we'll be looking at family resource centres. They're looking for more than one off funding to help them recover from COVID. That's coming up next. And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Now, family resource centres in Galway are calling for long-term funding for proven therapeutic services. To discuss this further, I'm delighted to say I'm joined on the line by Annie Rosario, who is the coordinator of Gort Resource Centre. Annie, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm very well, Annie. Thanks for joining us today on the programme. Just talk to us about this call from the family resource centres. We know they do a lot of great work in communities and in local areas, but you want more long-term funding rather than a once-off payment following the pandemic.
That's absolutely correct. Where this came about really was that we did some research immediately after COVID to capture the voices of children, their families, about their experiences and about the impacts that COVID had upon children and their families. And, you know, I suppose looking at how children felt during COVID, some of the findings were, and it's not news to us really, but, you know, from the research point of view, children reported being sad, angry, annoyed, bored. And the therapists themselves, once they were working with the children, I suppose what happened was there was the National Resilience and Recovery Fund, which we applied for. So approximately 800,000 was awarded to the Family Resource Centre programme. So there's 121 families across the family resource centres across the country, and 83 family resource centres participated in that, including ourselves. I suppose feedback from that, it was wonderful because we would have had children on our waiting list. I know that Solace and Headford rolled it out as well. So did Clan and Uachtaráid and Ard and Dogishka. So it was amazing for us to get this funding. But again, it was once off funding, you know. I suppose the thing about family resource centres, you know, we are cradle to grave. We provide wraparound supports. So when a child and their parent or guardian comes in, yes, you know, they can avail of the therapeutic support, but there's so much more going on. You know, for example, here in the Resource Centre, we're providing food support to approximately 60 individuals and families in the community. Yeah. We have domestic abuse outreach. We have the Rape Crisis Centre here. We have the problem gambling support. So it's that community-based element that's so important, and the children and families don't have to drive to the local city, you know, to access supports and services. It's community-based, it's non-judgmental, it's confidential, it's professional. We're set up to do it, you know?
And that Recovery and Resilience Programme for Children, that grant provided one-off funding of 1 million to the 83 yeah. FRCs, as you said. Now, if that was spread evenly between the 83, that would be a little over 12,000, I make it. Is that a drop in the ocean, or does that go a long way?
It is a drop in the ocean. And certainly, I suppose, you know, we're always aware not to be funding-led. So let's say here in Gort, we had just over 20 children on our waiting list. So, you know, we put in, I think, for about 5,500, you know, and, you know, let other centres that have a greater need avail of more funding should they need it. But the issue for us, I suppose, is now our play therapy has doubled. We had wonderful Niamh Fox here one day a week. She's now 2 days a week, and we're incredibly lucky. We have a qualified play therapist who's doing her master's, so she's on placement, so we've got an extra day a week. So the numbers are increasing. I think we have about 28 children on our waiting list now, and quite honestly, it's not acceptable that we're relying on income from clothing banks and the generosity of fundraisers and people in our community. The Santa Cycle here in Gort at Christmas time, they donated the money towards our play therapy. So we really need long-term sustainable funding. You know, it's very hard to plan. It's very hard to recruit play therapists. Ideally, you know, it would be wonderful to contract play therapists in and know that you have the funding to sustain the service.
Mm. Because government have stepped up to the plate in terms of other organisations, whether that be Section 38s, etc. Would you like to see something similar happen with your own centres in the Family Resource Centre sphere?
Absolutely. The connection is going a little bit here for some reason. But anyway, absolutely. I mean, that would be part of our, I suppose, strategically looking at it, that we engage with our own department. As you know, we get core funding under Thusla. Mm. We can look at the HSE, we can look at other partners, but we can't keep going on the way that we are. We've proven that we've got the capability to roll this out. It's what we do. It's what we do incredibly well. We have all our policies, our procedures, everything is in place. And we're best placed as community-based organisations. We're really best placed to be able to do this and to provide the support for children and families in our communities that need it.
Just give me that figure again, the amount of children waiting for therapeutic services at your resource centre.
At the moment, for us, it's 28.
28 too many. And just talk to us about what that would mean to them if they could avail of this service.
Well, I suppose, you know, the impacts on children were, you know, there's impacts on social skills. There are developmental delays. There can be a lack of confidence, a lack of self-esteem. And of course, all these can be related to educational issues as well. And there's increased anxiety amongst children. So we all know the earlier that these children get this support, the better. So it'd make a huge difference in the lives of children. And we really need to be able to guarantee that this service is sustainable. They engage in all sorts of different activities through, and now I'm not a play therapist, you know, but, you know, we would have messy play activities, which helps build fine motor skills and problem solving skills and even foundation maths and science concepts and vocabulary skills. And we have sand play, so they can create three-dimensional pictures in the sandbox books, you know, and they have miniature toys, and there's art, and there's clay, and there's games, and of course there's calming techniques that the therapists use with what they call emotion cards. So it's very child-centered, meeting the child where the child is at. And we're so incredibly fortunate to have the caliber of therapists that we do. But we would like to be able to guarantee the service going forward.
Can you quantify that? How much would it be per year to provide the service you want to provide?
For us at the moment, we're looking at over 17,000. So it's not a lot. It's really not a lot. We've a dormant accounts funding application came out quite recently, so we've put in for that, and great if we can get it. But this turning around and trying to fund supports and services from grants, we're grateful when we get them, but it doesn't enable you to plan properly, and that's what we need to be able to do.
Have you heard any positive soundings coming out from government on this?
I haven't yet, but we're very tenacious and as a program, and we'll keep fighting. You know, we always fight for what's best for children and families and individuals in our communities, and we're quick to respond as well. That's the beauty of being in a family resource centre. I think, you know, we can pivot and we can address needs. But we need to be able to, we need to be supported to be able to do that as well.
All right. Well, there's elections coming up, so we'll see who shouts loudest in the coming weeks and months. But Annie Rosario, the coordinator of the Resource Centre in Gort, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thank you so much. A pleasure.
Now, just go to your comment lines very quickly. I can tell you that the Galway Hospice has launched its 2024 car raffle, and the hospice, the first prize is a Kia Picanto. Second prize is a family holiday to France, sponsored by Keller Travel. And third prize is €500 in cash. Tickets are just €10 each, three for €20 or 15 for €100. Tickets are available from raffle.galwayhospice.ie, from Galway Hospice, Renmore, or on 0917708688. The draw will take place on Thursday, the 2nd of May. Terms and conditions apply. And in relation to the aquaculture farm story we had earlier on with Eamon Coy and Martin Galvin, this listener says, sounds very similar to the four wind farms planned for the Tuam area. Complete disregard and destruction of local villages and communities. All about big companies making huge profits under the umbrella of climate action. And another comment outstanding from Friday morning's programme. We'll bring that to you later. Still to come on the programme, though, we'll have a little dissection of the referendum results with Pauline O'Reilly, Senator of the Green Party, and A&2 Rep Luke Silk. All that plus lots more coming up after news.